Welcome to the latest episode of Out of Left Field Podcast. We are podcasting from the Gulag Archipelago of Soviet Kanakistan, otherwise known as beautiful Vancouver Island. I am your producer and co-host, Ben. In the house, we have Mac.
Hi.
And our senior computer security correspondent, JP. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
So all across North America, we've seen just a rash of protests against police violence. And we wanted to have our friend JP back on the show to talk about some of the best practices of what we like to call OPSEC, which is operational security. As a kind of mandatory disclaimer, we just want to say that we are not encouraging anybody to do anything illegal or loot anything or destroy any property or anything like that. We just encourage people to express their constitutional, their charter rights and their First Amendment rights to, express their opinions. We've seen and to engage in peaceful protest against, for causes that they believe in. And, we have seen many police precincts and police forces across the country flagrantly violate their rights to free speech and their charter rights to freedom of assembly. And we want to help people make sure that they can express their opinion and get home safely. And that is why we decided to make this episode. So that's just the, obligatory disclaimer.
Yeah.
So I guess just from the get-go here, JP, what is some advice just before we get into the more technical stuff about cell phone usage and mesh networks and whatnot that we can share with our listeners about some kind of good tips, best practices for protesting?
Well, especially in the area of communications, I know it's very attractive to think that having a cell phone with you when you go to a protest is useful because it's a camera and it allows you to record interactions. It might also allow you to coordinate movement, know where to go, know where not to go, but it's a bad idea. And at one point it might have been feasible. I don't think it is anymore. Cell phones are tracked, they're monitored. EIMIs are cataloged. This is used as evidence of attendance and is definitely going to quote unquote put you on a list. So I'm thinking if you're going to go and protest, probably leave the cell phone at home.
I read an interesting post on Reddit about a week back from someone that, they claimed to be, having been involved with the Israeli military or police force or something. And actually, a lot of American law enforcement officers are trained in Israel, and so they kind of share tactics back and forth. And one of the interesting things that they said that was that, your biggest risk as a protester is not getting tear gassed. It is not getting hit with a rubber bullet, although they can permanently disfigure you, as we've seen multiple examples of in these recent protests. And it's not getting maced. The biggest risk to you is what happens afterwards, because police will scrape social media pictures, they will cross-reference those to facial recognition databases, and they will try to fucking find you. And we saw this probably most starkly with the Ferguson protests a couple years ago, where, multiple, I think it was six or more of the main organizers for the Ferguson, Black Lives Matter protests were found, with bullets in the back of their head and, basically burned in their cars.
Committed suicide by bullet to the back of the head.
Yeah, classic. And set fire to their vehicle after having shot themselves in the back of the head. Classic suicide method. They're not fucking around. And so we want to make sure that people practice, best practices and get home safely. So specifically, there are some protest best practices, like go in a group, don't don't leave anybody behind. Make sure you bring snacks, bring water, have an attorney's, number written in with a Sharpie on your arm in the event that you have one phone call that you're allowed to make. Is there anything else that comes to mind?
Don't bring the cell phone.
And don't bring the cell phone.
You know what? It's surprisingly difficult to leave your home without a cell phone. Because it's a reflex where three steps out, you'll be going, oh crap. I wouldn't even bring it if you put it in one of those fancy little pouches that block all the signals, because you Faraday don't know pouch. If you are going to be arrested and if your cell phone is going to be seized. And it's a tough sale because, people depend on these devices so much, and you're thinking, oh, I could use it to record police interaction. And while you're perfectly allowed to record, that doesn't mean that the police is going to respect your rights as far as being allowed to.
One thing I just want to ask about that. So like any kind of cell phone, does it matter if you have a SIM card in it, any of that sort of thing?
So you want to bring a burner phone with you? That's I'm not exactly convinced that would be a better idea either. If anything, I think that would flag you even more.
yeah, fair enough.
Probably better than your daily driver with like all your info and your intel. And if you get caught up in a protest, or if you happen to be in a location where there is a protest taking place, I would probably disable facial recognition login and disable fingerprint login and leave in a password or a series of numbers as a login, so that you can't be forcibly compelled to unlock your phone. Like someone can't hold your hand to the fingerprint reader, for example.
And what about like geolocation? Is that something they should turn off as well?
So in order for a cell phone to work properly, it has to periodically ping cell towers. And the reasoning behind that is that, you know, it talks to usually about three cell towers and says, hey, which one is the best signal? And that's the one it ties its cell phone to. And if you need to get a call, that's how it happens. The problem is that it doesn't require a warrant, and the police have access to that information and regularly use it. And it doesn't require a warrant on their part. They just ping a cell phone and find out where that phone is. And you can bet that in the middle of a protest or an event like that, they're keeping track of all of the cell phones that they're pinging and all of the cell towers, and they can triangulate. So it's a really good way to, you know, be followed.
So that begs the question of stingrays. What is a stingray? I want to inform or remind our listeners that the RCMP has, I think, been using... they've been using stingrays. The police in the United States use stingrays. What are they, and how do they work?
So a stingray is a fake cell tower. Basically, it inserts itself into the network of cell towers and says, "Hello, I'm available." And if it gives you a better signal than the actual physical tower, your phone will pair to that fake tower, and then any information that goes through it is interceptable by law enforcement. There's usage of them. There's no clear legislation, to my knowledge, about having those. And I know that many, many, many police departments have them and are very reluctant to talk about how they use them. And also, it's kind of an indiscriminate device. So if you use a stingray as part of a police sting, no pun intended, you're intercepting the bad guy's information and possibly a whole bunch of innocent people who happen to be in the proximity.
And as far as I understand it, police have been using stingrays during this rash of Black Lives Matter protests to intercept this very communications. So I think it's probably safe to say that any information that you communicate over a cell phone to another person is very likely compromised. Is that too much to say, or do you think that's accurate?
Regular information, yeah, probably. If, for example, you were at a demonstration and you were using something like Signal or an end-to-end encrypted technology, such as Signal, and there's a couple of other ones, but Signal is the one that I recommend the most of the time. They would know that there's information flowing, but they wouldn't be able to read the contents.
Signal is the communications software that Edward Snowden himself actually endorses the usage of. So if you are a protester and want to bring your cell phone to a protest, which you should not do, would you recommend, it sounds like probably using Signal is probably the safest method of communication if you decide to do that. Is that right?
Yes and no. I think that the presence of Signal might actually hurt you, okay, if anything. So now you have a cell phone, you're at a protest and you're arrested and your cell phone's taken away, and you have communication that thwarts and prevents them from finding out what information went to and from, that usually doesn't make them very happy.
Okay. So it sounds like probably the best idea is to leave your goddamn phone at home then.
Yeah, pretty much.
To be just a complete blank slate, right?
And that's a difficult proposition to get anyone to agree with, because cell phones are so ubiquitous now. It's like everybody has them. And a lot of people think, well, if I bring this with me, I can film actions that are taking place and then eventually upload them and say, look, you know, here's a cop with like, you know, a rubber bullet shooting some innocent person or taking a baton to someone else. But I still think that the negatives outweigh the positives, and I wouldn't take one with me.
Yeah. And I think if you do have a video that you think that the world needs to see, don't fucking upload it to Twitter. Send it to your favorite journalist, and they can publish it on your behalf, because as soon as you upload something that's under your handle or your account information or whatever, then that ties that to you. And if the police departments want to target you for filming that, which they frequently do, then you've basically just painted a target on your back at that point. So that's not really a good idea.
There's a number of journalistic outlets that have dead drops where you can provide them with information and they won't know where it comes from. The Guardian comes to mind. I think they have Times, New York Times also has one where you can send that information and it'll be delivered to them. And it's as about as anonymous as you can get.
Let's talk about maybe social media a little bit more, because I mean, I understand that it's an attractive idea. Like, people want to be involved in these protests. They want to be a part of it. It's a major historical movement right now that we're seeing. But social media can be very dangerous. If you do decide, if you do have, cool protest pictures that you want to upload, that you want the world to see, for fuck's sake, blur out people's faces, because if you don't, then you're putting them at risk, because
you're providing additional intelligence.
Yeah, you're basically doing the cops' jobs for them at that point. If you have protest pictures that you want to upload, fucking blur out people's faces and don't provide the police with any additional intelligence that they wouldn't have already. So I think that's very important to note. Do you have any other recommendations as far as like social media and protest videos and pictures are concerned?
Well, my biggest advice about social media is don't, period. don't participate in the social media platforms, or carefully monitor the information that you're uploading to social media. I think Facebook is evil, and of course it's being used against you, and I just wouldn't participate with the platform, period. And yeah, uploading content there has to be heavily curated. You have to stop and think long and hard about what you're uploading. I've stopped counting the number of times where I wanted to upload something on a social media platform on which I participate. Now, like, you know what? That might not be a good idea.
Yeah, mostly it's just the only thing I upload on Facebook are memes and photographs of disgusting food. I'm not even lying.
Facebook is something that I've gladfully stayed away from because it feels too much like work. And it's got drawbacks, but it has advantages. I'm invisible for certain social groups. I don't exist because I'm not on Facebook. And that might not be a bad thing or not be a good thing, but it's just too much like work. I'm absolutely blown away that there is the need to describe these things, that the situation with law enforcement is so adversarial, and it's so it's so adversarial.
Well, you were mentioning about the adversarial relationship that the police seem to have with communities across North America and the world, and I think it's important to kind of point out that at this point it's very apparent that it is not the job of police departments to protect communities. Their job is to protect capital and to protect private property. In fact, I think it's also worth pointing out that in the United States, at least, I'm not too sure about Canada, Mac, maybe you'd know more about this, but a lot of the police departments are direct descendants of either slave patrols of groups of, you know, people that were trying to track down and, you know, capture escaped slaves during the era of slavery in the United States, or were union busting Pinkertons. Those were the roots of the police departments. I would imagine in Canada it's kind of similar.
No, it's just the RCMP, basically, which are even worse, because what they were originally was basically like a paramilitary organization for the British Empire. Sort of like if you were either a retiree or you got fired from the actual military, you could like join, you know, the, you know, mounted police, and they would just do military stuff in the area they were assigned to.
The other day we had a conversation where you were talking about how it's, I guess, both Canada and Iran are the only two countries in the world that have, sorry, can you remind me?
Oh, yeah, it's funny, because, so the RCMP, because of just how it exists and still exists in this country for reasons that are bizarre and stupid, is the only police force outside of Iran that operates, that does operate at every level of government, from the municipal to the provincial to the federal to also, investigations. It has its sort of, you know, fingers in every single kind of police pie, with a couple of exceptions. I mean, we were apparently going to have a new provincial police force, but that never happened.
It's pretty sad to have that revealed to you, like just to what extent they're combative, and they're not there for helping the community. And this is the direct result of multiple governments defunding social programs and basically destroying the social safety net. So we don't have as many asylums as we have. Let's just take the people that have serious problems that should be in an asylum and dump them on the street. They're not going to start taking drugs and committing crime. They're not going to represent 85% of like the police calls, that's for sure. That was a horrible mistake. And as a direct result, the police are now sort of forced to do a bunch of jobs which they shouldn't be doing. That results in a great amount of frustration on their part.
Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit when we interviewed Cory Doctorow in our last episode, where, the police are the only people that you can really call, like that they're the only available people to call. So if you're, for example, violent psychopath neighbor, just off the top of my head, is having a breakdown, who are you going to call? The police, because there's no one else. Even if you would maybe prefer a social worker or someone else to speak with them, someone that's actually trained professionally to deal with people with mental health or substance abuse issues, there's no one that you can call that has that expertise, and you just have to call the cops, and there's nobody else. I think that...
And the mandate is not to de-escalate, it's just to deal with it.
Yeah, in whatever, you know, efficient blunt force way that you're able to. And it's, I think that there are much better ways of dealing with the systemic issues of poverty and discrimination that we experience, you know, that people experience in their communities than having police officers there. I mean, they're basically there just to, you know, kind of have their batons and their guns and try to suppress whatever issue is happening. But that doesn't deal with the systemic issues that people are experiencing. And that, you know, I think that, again, as we mentioned in our last episode, if anything good is going to come out of this, you know, crisis and all of these protests, it's that we can begin to have the conversation of how to deal with criminal justice, to deal with systemic problems in our communities in a better way than just calling the cops on people. That, you know, that a lot of the core reasons why people are in these situations that they find themselves in are due to poverty and are due to discrimination, and could be handled much better by, you know, social workers and nurses and other people. And the way is not to give more money to the police, like Joe Biden might recommend, but is to give money to, you know, social welfare programs.
Well, that's what that's the underlying message when they're saying defund the police. And that's the sadness of it is most people hear defund the police and they just figure, oh, well, we'll disband the police and there won't be any more law and order. No, the idea is to take all the money that's being invested in police departments and like purchasing like decommissioned military equipment. Like not too long ago, I was reading an article that apparently the Victoria Police has a new armored vehicle.
Yep.
That they paid a fortune for.
Oh, I'm, yeah.
Like, why exactly do they need a tank?
They needed that for I think it was like some incredible, you know, the usual police thing where they give a really vague answer that sounds even creepier than if they had just said to stop a riot. It was like, you know, civil disobedience incidents that can't be managed any other way. That apparently, though, they also wanted to be allowed to go around with their lights on all the time, which was interesting. An idea the Vic PD had of just like having their blue lights on as they like patrol every neighborhood and just have them on all the time.
Wow, that's not some cyberpunk dystopia level shit right there.
No, not at all.
For some reason, that was a bridge too far for the cities, and they were like, no, not this year. Ask us again next year.
Yeah, once things get totally out of control.
You got your tank, all right? This is, you know.
I don't know. I suppose there might be a scenario in which such a vehicle would be useful, but it sounds pretty remote.
Well, the useful scenario are all things where it's like, okay, much like a lot of what the police are supposed to be doing, and kind of similar to their like omnipresent monitoring of all social media. There's this like idea behind it that they will bring up of like, yeah, but what about this scenario? Or like, what about a situation where we need to have everyone's cell phone information? You saw Batman, right? That movie where he had all the cell phone data. What about a situation like that? And I guess that's sort of where this kind of comes down to for me is that like, I just ask you, like, how do you think that there is actually any reason for them to be monitoring sort of social media and cell phones the way they are? Like, is there actually a scenario where this is needed?
At that point, you're talking about information overload. You need to be able to sift through this information, find what is relevant and what isn't, and you're just going to be buried under a ton of info. And I can guarantee you that if laws are passed that allow, for example, a very invasive contact tracing methods, when contact tracing will no longer be kind of like the number one priority, they're not going to want to give that up. Well, once something like that is enacted and a law is passed and that capability is now available, no one ever wants to give it up once they have it.
Do you mean contact tracing for like COVID?
Yeah. They were talking about there's different levels of how invasive the contact tracing would be. there's some suggestions, you know, that you voluntarily install the app and you're like, great, you know, now I'm being contact traced, all the way up to, no, it's arbitrarily done and you don't have a choice because we want to find out where there's a flare up of COVID. That's, you know, it's an awesome situation. That's perfect to request that kind of invasiveness and the level of visibility that they have because everybody's carrying a cell phone, which is essentially a giant snitch. But once that right has been given, it will never be taken away.
I would just like to push back gently over what you said before. Mac asked if there's a actual legit reason for them to be monitoring all this social media information. You said no. I would actually say yes, there is, because their job is not to keep communities safe. Their job is to enforce fucking property rights.
All right,
and
well,
so fine. The more information that they can get, then the better for them. So that goes with hand in hand with their actual, not stated purpose.
Yeah, but I suppose
I wasn't going to say like a legitimate reason.
I was sort of talking about like, is there a legitimate reason? But realistically, I'm happy to hear either one. I mean, if the police force were to just be like, we want all this data because it makes our dicks big, I'd rather hear that than just nothing. Like, if that's really the best answer they could give, is just like, well, it makes us feel powerful and we just like it, then just say so.
Yeah. Well, you know that they're going to say, think of the children or something.
What children? What the hell? Like, we're talking. Yeah, what, at the protests? Like, what? That they shot in the face with a rubber bullet or whatever? All the children get tear gassed? I don't know. Like, what children? What are they talking about?
So, one thing that I wanted to bring up while we're talking about protesting and, you know, police departments and whatnot, is the issue of masks. So in Canada, this was actually put into law by Stephen Harper's conservative government, and because the Liberals are completely fucking useless, they never bother to revoke this law because they are cowards.
That's probably their best campaign slogan.
Yeah. This was passed a few years back. So law C-309 bans the wearing of masks during a riot or other unlawful assembly. Some American states also themselves have anti-mask laws. So, obviously, we are living in the horrible dystopian era of the COVID-19 Rona pandemic. And
where you got to wear a mask. You could be fined potentially for not wearing a mask under certain circumstances.
Yeah,
including
then
during
throw them into jail for wearing one.
Yeah,
yeah,
they could just be like arresting everyone with a mask and fining everyone without to pay for that day's arrest.
Yeah. So
you gotta laugh.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Jesus Christ. So I just want to remind Canadians that this law is still does exist, and if the RCMP or other law enforcement agencies feel like it, they would very happily charge you in violation of this law if you are involved in a protest that they don't like. So it's worth mentioning that, okay, number one, yes, absolutely, the Rona is the biggest immediate risk to all of us, but also wearing a mask is also a risk to us. I don't know. Maybe
I feel we need to point out a difference. I mean, if you're going to be wearing a Guy Fawkes mask, then I don't have a lot of pity for you if they arrest you. If you're going to be wearing a medical mask, then that one I'm a little bit more lenient towards.
Well, I think people will be wearing medical masks for many years to come, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether or not we get a vaccine or not, I think it's just going to become one of those things you just do.
I personally can't wait for when either China or Cuba comes up with the vaccine for the Rona and the media pundits collectively lose their goddamn minds.
Oh, God help us if America comes up with it. It's going to be like $50,000.
It'll be like $5,000. Yeah. Yeah, fuck them. apparently, though, there's like 100 different vaccines that are like developed already and currently undergoing trials, so I don't know.
That's good.
I'm not going to get my hopes up, but, you know, that's kind of cool.
It's 2020. Why would you get your hopes up?
Yeah, this is, like, literally the worst year of anybody's life. Like, why would I be hopeful about fucking anything right now?
I mean, I don't know. 2001 was pretty bad and all that.
2003 sucked, too. I don't know. 2020.
If America invades a country this year, definitely top worst year of my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
But...
So, Jesus. I guess onto the next topic, facial recognition. So we discussed this a little bit, but with all these protest videos being uploaded onto Twitter and Facebook and other social media platforms, facial recognition, you know, poses a existential threat to people's security and privacy. In fact, the RCMP, according to an article on the Taib, the RCMP have been using facial recognition software since 2002, despite denying it multiple times, and they have a contract with a company called Clearview AI to help them do so. Can you comment on facial recognition, how it works, and what sort of risk it poses to people that are uploading protest pictures and videos to social media?
Yeah, how well it works, too, yeah.
Well, so Clearview and their software have been proven to be pretty damn inaccurate, the more so if you happen to be of African-American descent.
Ironically.
So the software incorrectly flagged senators, I believe, as criminals because they were black.
So the software is itself racist. So the police force will be able to make good use of it.
So I think there's a wonderful opportunity to have some medical masks that use particular coloring and lines, like vertical lines. There's a study that shows that you can absolutely just wreck facial recognition with facial makeup, and there's even a line of clothing that aims to confuse the software by just having bars that are vertical on the face. So I think there's an opportunity to have like very fashionable face masks for COVID that would absolutely just break facial recognition. Overall, I think it's a super bad idea. We should pass a law to make that completely illegal because, bad idea.
Okay, but I just want to be clear here. It's like bad, not because it's easy to break, though, right? Like but because it's invasive.
Because it's invasive, because there are unintended uses, because the software can be prone to mistakes, and then you'll be held accountable to the mistake of a software that says, "Hey, this guy's a criminal," but you're not. Also, because. It's illegal for me to run around with a mask, and it's looking like I'm going to have to pretty soon.
Welcome to 2020. And I guess, I mean, having to wear a medical mask in public basically at all times now sucks, but, it makes you more or less immune to facial recognition, which is cool.
Yeah, when you're trudging down to the grocery store to buy $20 worth of cheapo pasta and then, you know, for the next 2 weeks, you can be happy knowing that facial recognition software will probably not cause you to be randomly arrested later that day.
I got to tell you, it felt really weird going to the bank while wearing a bandana with, what are those little booby pillows? My girlfriend made me one. They're padding for bras sewn into bandana.
Yeah,
I walked in with that and black rubber gloves, and I was like, I really, really feel like I'm robbing the place, and then bought car insurance.
Yeah.
And everything was fine.
Yeah, well, that's not only normal in 2020, but expected and encouraged. Who would have thought?
Good. Should be encouraged more. We're going to need it from the sounds of it.
So one thing that I wanted to touch on is the concept of mesh networks. So one thing that we saw recently in Los Angeles specifically is that, I can't remember exactly the date that it was, but it was when the first protests were really breaking out in the United States. And this is unconfirmed, and I still don't really know the gist of exactly what happened, but At roughly 8 p.m. Out of Los Angeles, everything just went completely fucking dark. And there was, you know, very little, you know, because I was, you know, looking up the, you know, hashtag Washington protest, hashtag Seattle protest, hashtag LA protests. And I was just checking them every day, pressing F5, refreshing and just trying to get the latest updates from all the different protests coming out of different cities in the United States. And it just went completely dark out of Los Angeles. And it seems that they just cut the cell tower service just entirely, which shows that, you know, as much as we rely on the, you know, cellular and internet infrastructure to communicate with one another, you know, the state and, you know, private corporations, they own that. They own the network. They own the infrastructure. And if they want to prevent us from communicating with one another, they can just do that. And I think it behooves us to at least explore the possibility of alternative means of communication and networking our devices to one another so that we can communicate in times of crisis. And that brings up the topic of mesh networks. What is a mesh network and how does one set one up?
So traditionally a network is a machine talking to a point upstream, and then your signal is propagated from there. Mesh is a machine talking to another machine, talking to another machine, talking to another machine, possibly then talking to the upstream point. And I think that what you witnessed was probably the internet cutoff or shutoff switch, where in order to hinder communications between people, they're just going to cut all communications. So the advantage of a mesh network is that you can keep some communication going. You might not be able to talk to the outside world, and you can kind of recreate your little home internet. And that can be done with like off-the-shelf equipment. There's some mesh-specific equipment that's available. There's software that you can install on phones to enable mesh networking. So it basically makes every phone, for example, in a chain, part of the network. You talk to the phone of the person that's to your right, it talks to the phone of the person that's to his right, and so on and so forth. And that's how you can propagate information and still be able to communicate with each other and possibly get to a point where the upstream signal is not blocked, and then everybody rides through that phone, albeit much, much slower.
So, what, I mean, on a level of maybe 1 to 5, what sort of technical sophistication would someone need to set this up? And
it can be as simple as installing a mesh networking app on your phone, of which there are several. There's Wirechart, ServoMesh, Signal Offline Messenger, for example, BridgeFly. There's a bunch of them that can be had and can be installed on your machines. And now, if you're looking at a more permanent blackout of information, that's when you want to start trying to deploy infrastructure to kind of recreate a mini internet. So that at the very least, you can file share or do a video call between mesh nodes.
Okay. In the event that people would actually need to set something up like that, do you recommend any particular apps or resources or guides that we can include in our show notes?
I'm really hoping that this isn't something that they start trying to deploy here. I know that they've done this in countries with very repressive governments, where they just, you know, arbitrarily cut the internet off. We don't want our population to, you know, broadcast what's taking place. So we're just going to turn the internet off. I don't know the feasibility of that in North America in general. I think the internet is too integral to how industry wheels turn. But they might. There is some specific mesh dedicated routers and access points, and they would require to be deployed. There are ways to modify the firmware on existing hardware to make it mesh compatible. You can go on Amazon and buy mesh access points. For example, if you're trying to get signal in your house and there's heavy interference in one area, you can deploy a mesh network where your router talks to a mesh node that talks to another mesh node that talks to you in your basement, and then you have internet access. Now, whether or not I would like advocate like running around with a backpack with a mesh access point when you're going to a protest, I think that falls in the same category as going to a protest with a cell phone. Bad idea.
Yeah. So there's still, in the case of protests, which is sort of where we started off with a lot of this conversation, the best idea, the simplest answer is still the right one, which is just don't bring a cell phone.
The disadvantages of having such a device versus the advantages that it brings it's apparent that having that device is going to cause you more problems than being able to communicate with other people to coordinate movement, for example. I'd say I'd even bring those little shortwave radios, the little commercial ones that you can buy. I'd rather use that than a cell phone, because that's not going to store every text I've done in the past 5 years on it.
So, if you needed to coordinate with someone, you just pick up some cheapo walkie-talkies or whatever?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, well, everyone go to Home Depot and pick up some walkie-talkies. And
that was part of the shopping list once the whole COVID thing came down.
Step one, buy walkie-talkies. Step two, protests. Step three, ? Step four, profit. JP, would you have any kind of anything that we haven't brought up yet on this OPSEC episode of advice that you would have to protesters who want to exercise their peaceful First Amendment or
section?
What is it?
I don't know what section it is. The charter's a fucking not worth the paper it's printed on. Come on.
Chartered sanctioned, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly rights. Do you have any other recommendations off the top of your head of people that just want to, support Black Lives Matter or any other protest, things and want to keep themselves safe as well?
Medical masks to avoid facial recognition.
And Rona.
Yeah, yes. And Rona. A backpack, water, some food and snacks. Go in a group and make sure you stay in that group. The minute you start feeling unsafe, get out. Your gut instinct is an invaluable tool. If you're somewhere and you're like, oh, wow, this is like really getting out of hand, then yeah, get out.
Mac, did you have any final thoughts?
No, I think it's good. I suppose, it's both a good thing and a bad thing, I suppose, that a lot of the advice is fairly straightforward. There isn't here's the app that's on Google that you can just install on your phone that makes everything okay again. That doesn't exist. Fair enough. And I guess, yeah, it's just, be with people you know and leave if it's not safe. I mean, that's not always possible, but that's the best advice I think you could give. It's all pretty straightforward. Much like protesting is in the same world as everything else, right? Same sort of rules apply to what's a good thing and a bad, like a safe place and all that.
Well, it saddens me that the main advice is as soon as you start feeling unsafe, get out, especially when you're trying to exercise a right that you have to protest things that are taking place and that seems to be so heavily frowned upon by law enforcement and dealt with in such a harsh manner.
Well, I think they just want to go back to the days when they could just lead parades and whatnot, and everyone just loved them. But we're almost halfway through this year. I don't think we're going to be seeing that for a while.
Yeah, well, we're in the cool zone now, so who knows what's going to happen?
You say that like it's like the cold, like the heat death kind of thing.
No, cool, like sunglasses, cool.
Oh, right, anthropology, cool. Because that's the thing, anthropologists know what's cool.
Okay, well, I guess on that note, I just want to say that, you know, solidarity with all of the protests for Black Lives Matter across the continent and across the world. This is definitely not specific to the United States. We have many issues with police brutality and murders of unarmed civilians here in Canada. I think as of yesterday, more people have been killed in New Brunswick by the RCMP than from COVID-19. So we have our problems here in Canada as well for police brutality and misuse of forces. So solidarity with all your protesters out there. Stay safe and be secure. And if you want to support the show, we are on Patreon. And you can follow us at SoundCloud. And if you want to check out other left-wing Canadian political podcasts, you can find them at www.ricochet.media and click on the podcast button.
We love social media here at this podcast.
We love social media.
check us out on Facebook, Twitter. I post my location at all times so that my fans know where I am.
JP, thanks for being on the show again. We always appreciate it.
No problem. Even though most of what I said was rather depressing.
Well,
it's been actually pretty optimistic relative to the rest of this year.
Like I said, we're in the cool zone now. So fucking
cool zone.
What else do you expect?
No, we're in that condensed part. We're like, you'll have like a chapter of a history textbook is going to be like 1991 to 2019. And then 2020 is going to have to be its own chapter.
Its own chapter. Yeah.
That's the kind of situation we're in. It's just like a bunch of stuff's happening. And it's like, yeah.
Fuck it.
2020 was a great year.
They're going to have to add another expansion onto Tropico 6 to get rid of the modern era. And then we'll have like the 2020 era. Because it's like, sorry. Globalization, the integration of economies, world travel, general upward trends in like the economy, even if people aren't doing so great. Done. It's all over. Sorry.
Fuck it.